Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. What a week. Holy moly. I couldn't cover it all if I was broadcasting every day. But I must say, this is the kind of week where I envy Sean and Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh, because they get to blab every day. And, you know, let's face it, there's a lot more that they can cover. However, the things that they cover are generally not the things I cover, because I give you the behind the scenes, and I give you the forecasts, and I'm usually way, way, way ahead of the pack. And I think some of the things I'm going to be sharing with you this morning is going to be exactly that. And there's going to be a staccato of information coming at you. In fact, so many small little tidbits, which are critically important, that the mainstream media's totally ignoring while they talk about Stormy Daniels, that I can't list them all. So I'm just going to give you the major segments that we're going to be covering tonight. Or should I say this morning? Do my usual tonight thing, right? Dark out, 2:30 in the morning on Saturday. In any event, we're going to be talking a little bit about what Trump really has planned in this omnibus budget bill, at least I hope. What he really has planned, because more information has come out about it since my last show. I'm still really disappointed this bill passed. But if all the rumors are correct, and if the bill contains what it's now rumored to contain, and if Trump's tweets are not just, shall we say, tweets of angst, then I think we could see some pretty neat stuff come out of this bill. And I think we could see a lot of spending not happen that the Democrats thought were going to. I'll tell you more about that as we go along. And then we're going to be talking about what's in the bill. Some of the things that the Rhino Republicans and the Democrats put in the bill, which will make your hair curl. You're just going to be so happy with our elected representatives. I mean, they're looking out for us, folks. Did you know that there were 90 Republicans in the House that voted against it and 24 in the Senate? I think there was only a handful of Democrats, if any, that voted against this incredible, unbelievable omnibus bill. Then we're going to be talking a little bit about the big banks. You know, I've been bringing that to your attention for about the last 2 months. And, of course, nobody's been talking to you about all that stuff. And I don't think anybody else has told you just how dangerous it is to have your money in the 19 largest banks, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan, Chase, you know, that whole in sundry crew. But the House and the Senate are working on kind of a piecemeal dismantling of the Dodd-Frank bill. And there's some interesting things that have come out of this and some interesting things that are going to come out of this that are going to affect you. In the meantime, they've uncovered even more fraud at Wells Fargo. Some of the stuff I'm going to tell you here this morning is just going to knock your socks off. And then we're going to talk about the FBI, because, I mean, I'm actually getting to the opinion where maybe we should just disband the FBI, start a whole new agency, restaff it, you know, keep the boots on the ground that are in there now under whatever new designation they have, and just start kind of at middle management, work our way up, and completely replace the whole cabal, because, boy, it is corrupt, and they continue to make mistakes. They continue to have their fingerprints on all these mass murders. We continue to find out more and more and more about what they're doing behind the scenes. That includes leaving people to rot in Iranian jails, because and to rot, by the way, in the hands of ISIS, Americans, because the FBI was using it as an intelligence conduit. It's just unbelievable. It truly is. And, of course, our friend McCabe is in hotter and hotter water. And he has You know, he set up a GoFundMe page. Isn't that heartwarming? He wants to raise $150,000 for his potential legal defense. Gee, Andy, I don't think it's potential. I think it's coming right at you. And I got a couple of websites I'm going to share with you this morning, which I think you're going to find really interesting. We're going to talk about corruption at the continuing saga and revelation of more and more corruption at the upper levels of the Democratic Party. This morning, we're going to talk about what's come out about Obama himself and the White House and McDonough, his chief of staff, along with Susan Rice and the rest of them. And it's confirming exactly what I told you. I was like the first to tell you, by far. Over a year ago, year and a half ago maybe, when this whole Russian thing kind of started, you know, when it started to gather a little steam, this was in August, September, prior to the election, I said that Barack Obama has his fingerprints all over this. Barack Obama is indeed the spider at the center of the web, folks, and it's becoming more and more evident as we uncover more and more and more. And that's just, by the way, just with 3,000 documents from the IG's 1.2 million documents that have been amassed in his investigation of the DOJ and the FBI. That report has been long delayed. Hopefully it'll be coming out soon. I would imagine it's just going to be gang burners. And I'm going to tell you something about Jeff Sessions and his supposed refusal to appoint a second special counsel. And I'm going to give you not the pros and cons, but I'm going to weigh the odds of what he has not, will not, is not doing. Because maybe he's just the smartest guy around. I don't know. And maybe he has this all schnookered. And maybe it's all kind of a big chess game. I'm just not sure. But anyway, I'll give you the facts and you can figure it out. And then we're going to talk about, in my mind, I believe that the omnibus bill, the passage of that bill, the failure of the Republicans to repeal Obamacare, the despicable behavior of the Rhino Republicans. You know, John McCain's now out pushing a new book. That must be the end thing. Comey has a new book, and Hillary has a new book, and McCain has a new book. He's out pushing a new book, and the way he's pushing it is like trying to push it like he's part of the resistance, you know, against the populists, the nationalists, Trump, you know, the conservative wing of the Republican Party. I mean, these people have, like, no shame. I mean, zero shame. And we're going to talk a little bit about John Brennan, because as I forecast to you, and once again, I was one of the first people to tell you this months and months and months and months ago, John Brennan is up to this skullduggery to his eyeballs. And he's now been caught in 4 or 5 blatant lies, including under oath. And I don't know if you've watched him on CNN, but the guy is getting really strident. And, you know, when people get really strident, that kind of indicates they're a little nervous. You know, the panic is setting in. It's going to be really interesting what this IG report has to say and how it links into the CIA that Mr. Brennan supposedly ran. And then we're going to talk about, if we can get to it this morning, because we've got so much to cover, we're going to be talking about the whole nine yards with Google. Now, Microsoft just came out with like a new set of edicts, how they're going to review your stuff. You know what's been happening, or at least you've heard a little bit about what's happening with the whole Facebook blow up. All the FANG stocks, that is the high technology stocks, are like cratering. And I was one of the first, 3 or 4 months ago to start telling you about this. And I've promised you like this big expose show, and I've just been kind of nibbling around the edges on it because there's been so much going on that I just can't cover it in 2 hours in a single show. But we're going to try and get a little bit more into that, shall we say, sordid pie of high tech and just how dangerous it is to our society and to our democracy and to the republic. I mean, if you want to talk about election interference, true election interference, then one must talk about Hillary, Obama, the high-tech companies that aided both of them, and the ability, well, number one, the propensity, the outright blockage of conservative think, conservative news, conservative opinion by all these big high-tech companies are kind of out of the closet right now, and the impact that they could have on elections going forward. I mean, understand now that the majority of the nation, for the mainstream media has about had it. I mean, yeah, there's still whatever 10, 20 million people that watch the mainstream media. I think half of them watch it for entertainment purposes. I don't think they, I think most Americans don't believe the media anymore. I think they've totally shot themselves in the foot and they've lost credibility that they can never, ever, ever regain. And you know, they keep doubling down on it. They've lost credibility because of fake news, made up news, uncorroborated news, news which they get, you know, all starry-eyed and hysterical about, which 2 weeks later proves to be completely false, and nobody believes them. You know, it's the boy who cried wolf, except it's the boy who cried wolf 1,000x. So most people now get their information online in one way, shape, or form, either through streaming, live streaming, recordings, podcasts. For those of you who are listening to this podcast, you know, not on the AM and not on the web, but you're listening to the podcast, I mean, think about how you get your news now. It's changed dramatically. I can tell you that it's changed as our listening audience has grown incredibly. I mean, I think we reached 2.6 million cumulative listeners last week, which is phenomenal. And thank you all for listening from all over the country, Canada, Denmark, France. It's amazing. And that's just in a few short years. But the tech companies know this. And what they could do in terms of influencing an election by, as the left always does, controlling words, controlling information, controlling access to information, and therefore controlling thought, perception, and action is truly a scary thing. I really think it's coming to be time, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what else is going on in this realm, where these big tech companies get busted up. In other words, you know, you invoke the antitrust laws, just like we did with AT&T. Decades ago, which, by the way, spawned 50 terrific companies. It didn't hurt stuff. It helped stuff. It created jobs. It created opportunity. It created innovation. And it took away concentrated power that was in the hands of AT&T at that time via phone lines. The internet is far more pervasive than phone lines ever were. So that's some of the things we're going to be covering this morning. Now, as I am wont to do, and as most of you insist that I do, I'm going to start you off with a story. And there's a moral to this story. It's not about news. It's about life. So over this past week, I have a place, I call it my city fix, in a great resort area. And it's often rented out, so I don't get to use it much. And I got an email from a friend of mine who also has a place up there that they couldn't use. They had planned to come out this past week, and they couldn't make it. They had had an unfortunate incident where one of them broke their wrist. And they were nice enough to drop me an email 3 or 4 days before the place was going to be open and say, would you like it? And I got back to him and I said, I'd love it, but I have some things coming up that I have to handle, and there's no way I can make it for the full week. I can make it for 4 or 5 days. And they said, fine. And they went to the time and the effort, you know, to get it set up with the management company so they knew I was coming in instead of them and all the stuff you have to do. And I had all my stuff packed up. I had some skis packed, my ski duffel packed, and my travel bag packed. And I had intended to go up there Wednesday night, actually do the show from up there, and just kind of relax a little bit, get some writing done. It's a beautiful place. Get some skiing in if the snow was any good. It's, you know, just kind of hang out, get stuff done that lots of times I can't get done when I'm in the hustle and bustle of the ranch. Well, there was another business matter I had to attend to, a closing on a place, and I had originally assumed that that closing would occur on Monday. And knowing how real estate closings go, since I've been involved in them for, 45 years or 40 years, whatever it is, I figured, somebody's not going to get their paperwork in, and so UPS isn't going to deliver something on time, and it's probably going to extend into Tuesday. There'll be a last document or two to sign. And so I was kind of waiting anxiously on Monday, and some of the documents came in and others didn't. I went, no problem. I'll get them tomorrow. It's Tuesday. I'll leave maybe in the afternoon. I'll get up to the place, 9 or 10 at night. Plenty of time to settle in comfortably and have the rest of the week. Well, Tuesday about 5, the last of the documents had not come in. And you got to remember, where I live is in the middle of nowhere. So it's an hour, hour and a half round trip into town. And there is one pickup for UPS and one pickup a day for FedEx, and that's it. And if you miss it, tough noogies, your stuff is not going out to the next day. And even then, it may not get there, overnight. So I figured, disappointing, but I'll get the rest of the stuff on Wednesday, no sweat. I'll be out of here Wednesday afternoon. I'll only lose one day. And it's a pretty good drive. It's about a 14-hour round trip, 7 hours each way. So it's not like a hop, skip, and a jump. Anyway, Wednesday came and went. A couple more documents came in. Other documents didn't come in. There was some problem with somebody's whatever they were doing somewhere. And the closing is remote. It was not in the local area. So now it's Thursday morning. Now I'm starting to get a little anxious. And I keep looking longingly at all my stuff packed by the back door, ready to literally walk out and carry the 6 feet to the truck, throw in the back seat, crank the ignition, hear the roar of the diesel, and be on my way. Make a long story short, this morning, that's Friday morning. I guess this morning is now Saturday morning. Yesterday morning, Friday morning, I get a call from the title company that's handling all the stuff. And they said, we're waiting for one final document that you need to sign, and da-da-da-da-da. And I went, oh, crap. Anyway, that did not come in till afternoon. I managed to turn around, had to drive to town, get it in the zip tube. It was UPS, and that kind of concluded everything that had to be done. All the documents were accounted for, and the rest of the closing kind of could proceed, and stuff could be recorded, and all the stuff that goes on with the real estate closing. And by now, it's like 4 o'clock, 4:30, yesterday afternoon, Friday afternoon. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I still got some other stuff I got to clean up before I leave. They only had their place kind of open until Sunday. And if I got out of here at 6 o'clock at night, I wouldn't be getting in there till 1 in the morning. And then I'd have to be, even though I could ski or do whatever, I'd have to be checking out Sunday, and I didn't go. And I wrote my friends who were so kind as to offer me the deal and spend their time on it and apologized profusely. They're probably sitting back, and they're from back east. They're probably sitting back there wanting to wring my neck, and I don't blame them. But the moral of the story is this. The week that just went by and all the good stuff up there at that place that I was looking forward to didn't happen. Instead, I got bogged down in paperwork and nonsense and business and the rest of the crud. And that's a week that I can never replace. That is a trip up to this place that I will never have the opportunity to make again. under the same conditions in the same time frame, etc. I mean, obviously, I'll be up there again at some point. But it made me think a little bit, and it made me scold myself, chastise myself. Because when time goes by, it's finite. When opportunity arises that you would desperately love to seize, you know, carpe diem, seize the day, and you don't, you may not have the opportunity again. And sometimes you get your priorities confused. And they can be little priorities or relatively little priorities, like planning to be someplace for a week and then getting bogged down in other stuff and not getting there. Or they can be big priorities, like seeing your parents, you know, when they're in their 80s and 90s and their time is limited. Or seeing your kids or your grandkids because your time is limited. Because time is finite. Finite. And time squandered is time never regained. And that's the motto of my story this morning. Now, let's get the show going. Let's get the show on the road, shall we say. Since I didn't get on the road, we'll get the show on the road. Whatever. All right, let's talk about this budget bill first. Let me give you an idea of some of the nonsense that was in this omnibus budget bill. How about this? And these are just small items, but, you know, $1.3 trillion, there's like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of small items. And the bill was almost 2,300 pages. In my personal opinion, folks, first of all, you know, there's a rule up there, supposedly, in Congress, that everybody will have at least 5 days to review a bill. Well, this bill was put together, like, behind closed doors by Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer and their staffs. That was it. That's the only people that participated in this bill. I'm sure other people were slipping notes under the door that were handed to them by their lobby, by the people lobbying them. But the only people that wrote this bill were the four of them and their staffs. And they did not complete the bill. Remember, the government was going to shut down on March 23rd or Friday. Like, who cares? But they did not complete the bill until late Thursday. And the House rushed a vote. 90 Republicans voted against it. And then it went over to the Senate. And, of course, the Senate had to deliberate all night. Nobody read the bill, folks. The only four people who know what's in this bill are the four people who put it together. I'm not sure they do. Rand Paul, and I'm not the biggest fan of Rand Paul, although he's he is heads and tails above John McCain, Jeff Flake, and Susan Collins. But Rand Paul tried to read it the following day. He got to about page 600. Must have been speed reading. And my opinion is, after seeing all the shenanigans, this was a deep state maneuver. I think Donald Trump may in the end prevail on this. I think this bill will be way better than we thought it was, or should I say, way not as bad as we thought it was. Because he has it kind of figured out. Maybe. We'll see. But what's in this bill is just unbelievable. Never mind the big things I've told you about. The $500 million funding for Planned Parenthood, you know, which is really a Democratic arm. Not repealing Obamacare. Not handling DACA. Only $1.6 billion for the wall. I mean, I can go down a long list of big ticket items. But here's some of the smaller items, and there's hundreds of them, if not thousands. $12 million for scholarships for Lebanon. $20 million for Middle East Partnership Initiative Scholarship Program. I mean, by all means, let's train the next generation. Let's give the next generation of terrorists college degrees. I think that's a terrific idea. $12 million in military funding for Vietnam. 3.5, I could almost see that being important just because you want to contain China. But, you know, $3.5 million in nutrition assistance to Laos. $15 million in developmental assistance to China. I want you to think about that one. We're sending $15 million of our taxpayer money to China to assist them with development. This is the same China who's stolen trillions of dollars of our intellectual property, the same China that we've now levied aluminum and steel tariffs, et cetera, against. This is the same China that has the second most powerful and rapidly expanding military in the world, with 1.2 billion people, and who has an economy that some economists think will overtake ours in the next 5 or 6 years. The second largest economy on the planet. But the United States is sending $15 million of our money to China for developmental assistance. Okay. $10 million for women LEOs. I'm sorry, I don't know what LEOs are. In Afghanistan. $1 million for the World Meteorological Organization. I mean, the UN can't fund this? $218 million for promoting democracy development in Europe. Maybe they ought to spend the money for shutting down refugee immigration over there in Europe. $10 million for disadvantaged Egyptian students. $1.371 billion for contributions to international organizations. Oh, well, that's great. What is that? $1.3 billion, almost $1.4 billion for unnamed international organizations. What do you want to bet that not one of those organizations believe in American values? Would you, anybody want to bet me on that? $51 million to promote international family planning and reproductive health. $7 million for promoting international conservation. $10 million for United Nations environmental programs. I mean, I think we give them quite enough. In fact, I don't think we should give them a dime. Of course, that's just my opinion. $5 million for Vietnam Education Foundation grants. $2.579 million for the Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. Okay. $15 million for USAID for promoting international higher education between universities. Oh, by all means, let's pump some money at those universities that have been raising tuition by astronomical amounts. So much, in fact, that we have 1.2 or 1.3 trillion in student debt. And by all means, let's foster all these left-wing universities abroad, further influencing our left-wing universities here in the United States. That's a terrific idea. Wonderful. I should have thought of it myself. $1 million for Cultural Antiquities Task Force. $6.25 million for the Ambassador's Fund for Cultural Preservation. Obviously, none of that money reached the Taliban before they blew up all those unbelievably ancient relics over there in Afghanistan. $20 million for countering foreign state propaganda. Do you realize that Hillary spent $12 million putting together the dossier with fake Russian propaganda in the 2016 election? I'm not sure we have enough money in that category. $12 million for countering state disinformation and pressure. Now, I don't know what state means. Does that mean like red states or blue states? Or when you say state, is that like the deep state? Or is that the American amalgamated state? Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway. Now let's get to the better stuff on this omnibus bill. Here's the rays of hope. So Trump sends out tweets. You probably heard something about it on the news or through the rumor mill or through whatever news got to you on the internet that Google, Microsoft, Yahoo, Twitter, and Apple Alphabet didn't screw with, that managed to filter through to you somehow. But apparently, Trump is planning to build the wall, even though it'll be piecemeal, using funds that went to the Department of Defense. And if you remember correctly, they got 718 plus or minus billion of the $1.3 billion bill. And he needs somewhere between $15 and $25 billion, depending upon prototypes, et cetera, to build the wall. So that's an interesting development. And, of course, he's calling it national security. In addition, it now comes out that he has discretion in not spending money. Listen, I would not be surprised knowing now that that is the law which governs this bill. This is not a budget, which has a different set of laws attached to it. It's an omnibus bill. But I would not be surprised to see either no or very diminished funding to some of the Democrats' pet little projects like Planned Parenthood. Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be kind of cool, actually. Yes. So, you know, one of the things which really kind of tickles me about this, assuming it's true or partially true, is that this whole, in my mind, scheme by the deep state cabal that put together the bill, Pelosi, Ryan, McConnell, and Schumer, was to jam it through without anybody being able to read it. But I think what happened is it was so mammoth that they didn't read it either, and they didn't realize that there were all these loopholes in it, nor did they even think that Trump, being a businessman, would find them and exploit them. So it's kind of a backfire. It makes you kind of grin a little bit. Now, we'll see how all this boils down, but there is a ray of hope in the omnibus bill. By the way, here's some more on this. Twenty-first Century Community Learning Centers, they get funding. The National Endowment for the Arts and Humanities, they get $3 million more than before. Remember, the board of directors now includes Susan Rice and Valerie Jarrett. That's terrific. The bill, by the way, increases the federal deficit by $143 billion. Not that the Democrats care much about that, and neither do the Rhino Republicans, obviously. There's an extra $63 billion kind of unallocated slush fund for domestic spending of like every cut and flavor, like going to the ice cream store. And there is, God, it just goes on and on and on and on. By the way, the exact number of pages was 2,232 pages. So, you know, it wasn't 2,300 pages. I overstated. It was actually quite brief. You bet. You know, there was a line that somebody who wrote an article on this had, which really struck me, talking about Thomas Jefferson, who, by the way, was a fiscal hawk, a ferocious fiscal hawk, one of the founders. Let me quote this line. Surely Jefferson smiles down from his celestial Monticello. That was a great sarcastic deal. Now, I've been telling you a little bit about some latitudes, which happen to be in the bill, and some laws, and some other brilliant chicanery on the part of Trump to, number one, take some of the money that has been appropriated in this bill to certain areas, like the Department of Defense, and convert that, using the terms for national defense, to building the wall. And in other cases, not spending money that's been appropriated for many of the Democrats' pet projects, which they smugly assume would be getting lots of dollars. So let me give you a little background on this. Probably knowing that this was coming, because, you know, this stuff, even though it gets done in the dead of night, last minute, it percolates for a long time in the swamp. So in December, Trump declared a human rights emergency, we find out now, that broadly empowered the federal government to crack down on human trafficking or drug smuggling. Gee, what does that have to do? Oh, that's right, the wall. On Friday, Trump notified Congress that he's invoking the Balanced Budget and Emergency Deficit Control Act of 1985. There's a guy who studies the American government. I mean, that's what he does. He's done it for 30 years, very well respected. His name is John Salisbury. And in his mind, these moves by Trump and some others I'm about to describe to you, which he has never seen a president do, and he doesn't know of another president in history attempting to do, in his words, quote, opens up many new options, unquote. Let me quote Mr. Salisbury. By making these two declarations, President Trump has just communicated that he has the authority to not spend any funds he doesn't deem necessary and will return them to the U.S. Treasury. So funds for Planned Parenthood, he simply cannot allocate the funds. If he determines that building a wall on the southern border is a defense against human trafficking, well, then he can move funds from anywhere else in the Defense Department allocation and simply build the wall. Congress, listen to this now, Congress is powerless to stop cash reallocations on an omnibus bill, and cannot stop the Defense Department from taking measures under a declared emergency. Despite their language in the omnibus bill about the border wall, it is trumped by the state of emergency that Trump has declared. And he concludes by saying, I've worked for government for 30 years, and I've never seen anyone making the moves he's making now. So, hope springs eternal, folks, and I will keep you abreast on what is apparently Mr. Trump's five-dimensional chess game, while the rest of the planet is playing on a single board with checkers. We shall see. Now, you know, the next thing I wanted to talk about, once again, briefly, if there's such a thing. But I brought to your attention, I think I was the first in the media to bring to your attention, the fact that the administration was contemplating putting the question, are you an illegal alien or are you a United States citizen, is actually the question. Are you a United States citizen on the census forms? And that question, by the way, was on the census forms for 70 or 80 years, whatever it was, up to 1950. Then it was taken out for a while. Then it was back in. And then it was taken out, I believe, in 1995. Hey, Bill Clinton. Hey, Bill, baby. The Moto Voto Act and taking, are you a U.S. citizen, out of the census. Very clever. In any event, Trump wants to put it back in. And as I told you, ahead of everybody by months, the left has melted down because that question, adding that one line, which is totally constitutional. I mean, you got to remember the census form, folks, it's been 9 years since any of us filled them out, but they ask your gender and they ask your ethnicity and they ask your religion and they ask all sorts of stuff. So this is not a clean form to suddenly this new question has been added. This is a form that has all sorts of inquiry into things like, are you a United States citizen? Well, the Democratic Party has melted down. He has gotten them to admit that there's a number of congressional seats, particularly from blue states, Illinois, New York, California, Connecticut, and those congressional seats, folks, would not exist without illegal aliens. I want you to think about this now. The number of congressional seats, particularly from blue states, is far more than it should be because previous censuses, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, did not ask if people were U.S. citizens. If you're not a U.S. citizen, you should not count for the apportionment of either a state legislative district or a congressional district for representation in Washington, because you're not a citizen. I mean, it's really pretty simple. So the left is melting down over the fact that if this line, this one question, is on the census, they could stand to lose several dozen, up to several dozen, congressional seats and a whole bunch of legislative seats. No wonder they're screaming and yelling and in a total meltdown over this. By the way, it was the Trump Justice Department, that's right, Mr. Sessions, who requested that this be put back in the census. I find that rather interesting. It might give us a little clue as to what Sessions is really doing behind the scenes on the corruption at the CIA, the State Department, the DOJ, and the FBI. One can only hope. So the Democrats have now admitted in their hysteria that they will be really hurt in four ways. Let me read them to you. Okay. States with significant illegal populations, most of them controlled by the Democratic Party, could stand to lose seats in Congress. Number two, they could also lose electoral college votes, in presidential elections. Number three, they could see reduced federal subsidies to their states based on census counts. And number four, the Democrats could lose seats and representation. Representation of who, folks? Illegal aliens? In state legislatures. And remember why they're important, folks. Right? I mean, Barack Obama and Eric Holder have lawsuits going in 20 states. That's how important it is. Because they're the ones who draw the districting lines for federal offices. That's right. And, of course, they also make decisions relative to their individual states, which is also very important. So keep your eye on this census thing, because this is a really big deal. I told you about it. I told you it was a really big deal 6 months ago. And now the Democrats have admitted, A, it's a big deal, and B, why it's a big deal, which, folks, makes it a big deal to us bubbas. Because I don't know about you, but I don't want my life decided by a few votes in Congress that are cast by congressmen who should not even be there because their seat was created by illegal aliens. That just doesn't do it for me. Just doesn't do it for me. And I don't want them voting on my Second Amendment rights, my First Amendment, or anything else. The United States Congress is for United States congressmen who represent United States citizens. Period. Period. I believe under the politics section today on today's show, you will see an article on this, and you'll see a place that you can contribute to the group that's kind of leading the fight to make sure it stays on the census form. This "Are you a United States citizen?" question. Richard Viguerie, who's a pretty well-known conservative, it's his pack, fed up pack. And you know what? Send him $10, folks. Send him $10. This is a big deal. It's a really big deal. And the more the left melts down over it, the more you know it's really a big deal. By the way, speaking of the left, here's another little tidbit for you this morning. The Democratic Party, I'm not making this up, you can't make this up, which, as we know, has like drifted off into the left ozone somewhere, the left slash Islamist ozone somewhere. They are now going to make a plank for the 2018 and 2020 elections, the fact that they want to raise your taxes. I'm not making this up. That's going to be their spiel. And basically what they want to do, I mean, it's really... excuse me, I think it's great. Bring it on. Please, Democrats, campaign on this. This is terrific. This is like Nancy Pelosi speaking. It's like Hillary Clinton wailing about her loss. It's just great stuff. It's like Adam Schiff sniveling into the camera about Russian collusion, then saying there is no proof. It's right up there. Chuck Schumer, by the way, in announcing this strategy, described the tax cuts as, quote, unpopular, unquote. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi called them crumbs, and et cetera, et cetera. So here's one of the things they want to do. They want to raise the corporate tax rate, which was just lowered to 21%, back up to 25%. Now, that's still 10% less than it was. But, you know, a raise of 4% can have monumental effects on this economy and jobs, none of them good. And then they want to raise the top tax bracket from 37% to 39%. And the estate tax was raised to $11 million exemption. We talked about this when I talked about the tax stuff. You can put all this in the search bar and listen to those shows if you didn't hear them. That was raised to $11 million. Yes, you know, that may benefit some fat cats somewhere, but I'll tell you who it really benefits. It benefits ranchers and farmers who are generally land rich, cash poor, and, you know, if the patriarch of the family or the matriarch dies, then to the extent, let me word this right, to the extent that the total of his assets, his ranch and his cows and the whole nine yards, is above, in the prior to the new tax law, I think it was $5.2 million, there's a 55% tax on everything above $5.2 million. Well, you know what? These ranch families, let's say they have a $7 million ranch. I mean, that doesn't have to be a really big ranch anymore. Or a $7 million farm or dairy operation. In many cases, it's really tough to peel off a piece and sell it to pay taxes, particularly when the taxes are 55% of every dollar over $5.2 million. The new tax law raised that to $11 million, the death tax, it's called. The Democrats, in their wisdom, want to reduce it again to $5.2 million. Terrific. That'll get them a lot of votes in red states. And there's a couple other things they want to do, too, but here's the bottom line. They're going to try and sell it as these changes are really just taking money back that shouldn't have been given to the rich. But the fact is that the taxes will go up on everybody, folks. And these people are actually going to run on it. That will tell you just how far left they have gone. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Democratic corruption. I just have a couple tidbits here for you, although I could do 30 shows on it. I mean, there's no lack of it. And we learn something new every week. In fact, this week we learned that Mr. Biden, his son to be specific, somehow was paid or given or granted or who knows what, $1.5 billion by China. This is the same China that we're sending $15 million of our money to, by the way, to assist with development. That $1.5 billion, he then turned around and put $1 billion into a company by the name of CGN. CGN is a Chinese nuclear company. This is kind of like Uranium One, but on the Chinese side. And CGN, we now found out, has been indicted for stealing nuclear secrets from the United States. And one of the major shareholders is Joe Biden's son. You can't make this stuff up. They've also been stealing really valuable anti-vibration technology, which is key to all sorts of war aircrafts. Think about the vibrations of a jet fighter at 5 G's pulling, banking a turn. So here's old Joe Biden and his son, up to their eyeballs in corruption. It's kind of like Hillary and the Uranium One. It really is. Oh, and then we find out, by the way, that speaking of corruption, Peter Strzok, there's some more. Let me start at the beginning. So the FBI and the DOJ have been stonewalling Congress getting documents, which they have been requesting and subpoenaing for, you know, a year in some cases. And they're finally starting to cough up some of these documents, but we're talking about, once again, there's 3,000 documents out of 1.2 million. And think about all the stuff we've learned just from those 3,000 documents. Can you imagine what we're going to learn from the rest? But the congressional staffs over the last month or so noticed that the stuff which was being dribbled with painstaking slowness out of the DOJ and FBI in response to their requests and subpoenas was heavily redacted. And they asked FBI and DOJ, the same FBI, by the way, who lost the texts, remember that? They asked the FBI and DOJ, what's the problem here? What are you redacting? Oh, well, you know, this was the response. Well, you know, Strzok and Page, they were having a love affair, and this is just personal stuff that really shouldn't be out in the public realm. Well, you know, the congressmen rightfully got a little suspicious because, because let's face it, the FBI and the DOJ has lied through their teeth, and they were staffed and run by a bunch of corrupt Obama appointees. Comey and McCabe and Baker and Rozicki, the whole cabal. So they started going over and reviewing these unredacted documents in a tiny basement room that the FBI and DOJ relegated themselves over at the Department of Justice. And guess what they found? Those redactions weren't about little love messages and stuff. Those redactions included the name of the judge, I believe Canastro, pretty close, the name of the judge who's on the FISA court that Peter Strzok wanted to influence. It included deletions or redactions of sentences, which included the following. The White House is running the show. The White House is running the show. This is the Hillary Clinton email investigation and the contrived Trump-Russia investigation. The White House is running the show. And then there was a name redacted. Oh, and it comes out to be, well, there's the two names that were redacted. One name was Obama's chief of staff, and one name was his White House counsel. So even the documents that have been slow-walked, remember, we're talking about corruption now. Even the documents that have been slow-walked months late, dribbled out, a tiny fraction of what's available by the DOJ and FBI, thumbing their noses at congressional subpoenas, and therefore the Constitution, and therefore you and me, they couldn't even be honest about what they did produce or the reasons for redactions on what they did produce. It's truly remarkable. We've also learned this past week that McCabe didn't lie once. He lied on at least four different occasions about multiple felonious and treasonous leaks to the media of highly confidential and classified information. Yeah, no wonder he has a GoFundMe page to start raising some legal fees. We found out this week, let's stick with the FBI here for a moment. So this poor guy is captured by Al-Qaeda. And they take his laptop, and they take all his credit cards, and they start buying a bunch of laptops. The FBI knows he's been captured. They're in touch with the family. They tell the family, listen to this, they tell the family that he's turned to Al-Qaeda. He's now an Al-Qaeda operative. And there's no way they can get him out. In the meantime, the FBI is watching this outflow of like 11 laptops at a time, you know, hardly just a consumer purchase, to what they know to be the Al-Qaeda outfit that's holding this guy and others. They lie to his parents about the fact that he's turned, and they lie to his parents about the fact that they were working diligently to get him out, even though he had turned against his country. It just so happens this guy escaped, and the whole thing is getting blown wide open now. The lies of the FBI, the use of the FBI of an American hostage, making no attempt to free him whatsoever, despite telling the parents different, so that they could keep an intelligence source, i.e. keep Al-Qaeda buying computers and stuff using his credit cards so that they could track Al-Qaeda stuff. You with me? In other words, they didn't give a damn about this American citizen. And they didn't give a damn about the truth, even to his family. I think that's unbelievable. We have another FBI agent who has now pled guilty to illegally leaking information. That's just in the last week. We also find out in the last week that Patin, the guy who shot up the Pulse nightclub down there, his dad was an FBI informant for 11 years. And the FBI lied about it for the last 2 years in the court case in the trial of Patin's wife, who, by the way, was acquitted, I believe, yesterday or the day before. And, of course, she was acquitted. I mean, here's the jury sitting there going, wait a minute. The FBI is presenting evidence that she should be convicted, and now we learn that the FBI has been lying to the court, to us, and to the American public for 2 years about this very case, i.e. that the shooter's father was an FBI informant. I don't think you're going to get a conviction under those circumstances. You've kind of blown the credibility of the government witness. Oh, yeah, I'm not done, unfortunately. So, the other thing that comes out is that the FBI allowed the mainstream media to run with the story that this was really about the Pulse nightclub deal where 49 poor people were shot down by a Islamist, a radical Muslim, a Sharia believer, who yelled Allahu Akbar as he was killing people. The FBI allowed the press to run with the story that this was all about gays. This was really a kind of a hate crime against gay people because it was a gay bar. Well, that's all come out now to be totally false. Just in the last week, that's been blown apart. Once again, because of this trial of the wife. This guy went in and killed people at the Pulse nightclub for one reason. They were Westerners, they were infidels, and he was on a jihad, period. Didn't have anything to do with gay people. Because when you look at the FBI records, which they have but didn't reveal until now, he was casing about 10 different places, and he didn't care which one he shot up. He just wanted to pick the place where he'd kill the most Americans. Now, there's been two or three other FBI-related stories in the past week where they hid evidence, where they allowed a crime to occur because trying to stop the crime would reveal some intelligence source or otherwise do something that they figured was more important than the lives of Americans or maybe CIA, depending upon who was involved. And it really makes you wonder. You know, I had the producers post some information on Las Vegas last week. If you go back to that original Las Vegas story, the night that it was, I mean, you can go back and Google it. It was October 1. There's all these stories about these FBI agents getting to the room first. And there's other stories about 9 FBI agents being seen and spotted or whatever in Mandalay Bay before the shooting started. I mean, the whole thing. You can't make this. You know what happened in Parkland. And if you go back and listen to that interview, and I talked about it on this show, of that FBI, I don't know whether he was a special agent in charge from the local or who he was, but he stood there and I listened to him with my own ears. And he flat lied. He said that the first tip they received, they couldn't track down because they didn't have a name, they didn't have a source, they didn't have an IP, blah, blah, blah. And then we come to find out, not only did they have the name, there's only 27 people in the United States with that name spelled that way. And they did have an IP address. And then, of course, we learn about the second tip that came in January, which is a phone call to whatever central line, you know, the centralization thing that Obama did so they could control the crooks at the top. They called into the central line and said, this kid's going to shoot up the school. This should, you know, this kid is violent, blah, blah, blah. And that never got passed over by the operator to an agent. And if it did, it never got down to the Florida office of the FBI. I'm sorry, folks. When you have this much stuff going on with similar crimes, and something else I'm going to talk to you about this morning, too, which ties right into this, make you think a little bit. When you have this much stuff going on with similar crimes over a wide variety of locations, at different times, albeit fairly concentrated, 3 or 4 years, this is not a coincidence. There's something really wrong. Even even taking into account that the head of the top of the FBI and the top of the DOJ and the White House was completely corrupt during this time period. They weren't watching FBI business at all. They were interested in politics. Even considering that, this is too many deals and too many places with too many coincidences and too many similarities. Something is really, really, really wrong. I mean, really wrong. Then we have Bolton being appointed as National Security Advisor. By the way, I happen to love John Bolton. I think it was a terrific choice. I'm shocked he wasn't already in a position somewhere in the Trump government already. And we had McMaster stepping down. Let me give you a little inside scoop on this. So when Trump called Putin after Putin's quote-unquote election over in Russia, I think it was the week before last, he was given a set of talking points, a set of notes by McMaster's and his top two people on the NSA. The top two people, by the way, happen to be holdover Obama appointees. Hopefully Trump has now learned that holdover Obama appointees need to be fired, like, immediately. And he decided, he's the president of the United States, he can do what he wishes. That's why we elected him. That's why we hired him. He decided to not piss off Putin personally, because who knows what he might get done in the future. So he went against the notes from the National Security Advisor and his two Obama lackeys and congratulated Putin on his election rather than not congratulating him, which is what the notes had recommended. To make a long story short, within a matter of a day, the contents of the notes and what Trump had really said to Putin, i.e. congratulating him, was leaked. And Trump was pissed off, as you can well imagine, and as any of us would be too. And I have told you in the past that McMaster's was, in a lot of respects, an Obama lackey. I never trusted him nor liked him. And the leak could have only come from either McMaster's or his two deputy national security advisors, the Obama folks. Personally, I think it came from all three because it hit the news sources, if you remember the story breaking, like simultaneously. And it wasn't 3 days later that suddenly McMaster's was out along with his two Obama lackeys and John Bolton was in. There are no coincidences, folks, none whatsoever. But I love John Bolton being in that position. Oh, Hofstra University. So I told you, I don't know, 6, 8, 9 months ago when they started taking down the Confederate statues, I gave you my opinion on that, which is, it's history, leave it. But now, Hofstra University, there's actually students that are going to have a huge rally, they say, huge, because they want Hofstra University to take down the statue out in front of one of the main buildings of Thomas Jefferson. I told you what was really going on here. Taking down the Confederate statues, you know, is their attempt to control history. The touchstone of the past is the guidepost to the future. It also gave them like a racial thing that they could jump up and down about and get votes and all that kind of stuff. But I told you that this would extend, that their next target would be Adams, Jefferson, Washington, the founders. Because the founders had been slaveholders. Never mind that all of them were uncomfortable about it. Jefferson particularly planned to free his slaves. And that these are the men who wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, which basically, let's face it, folks, freed the slaves. Even though there would be a war fought 70 years later with 700,000 American casualties to hammer that point home north to south. But the rights of slaves were ensconced in the Constitution that these three men heavily participated in. And Thomas Jefferson, I'll remind you, was the Secretary of State. He was the governor of Virginia, and he was the third president of the United States. not to mention one of the primary drafters of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence. In fact, he almost single-handedly drafted the Declaration of Independence. But the students at Hofstra University want to take his statue down. And I told you before that this is not about Jefferson, Washington, or Adams. This is about taking down those pieces of history that relate to the founders, because the founders wrote the Constitution and the left hates the Constitution. I think my exact words, you can go back and put in the search bar, put in statues or put in Jefferson, Washington. But my exact words back in that show, give or take a sentence or a comma, I mean a period or a comma, was that this was designed to be an attack on the Constitution. Because if you can delegitimize the founders because they are racist, then you can delegitimize the document that they drafted, the Constitution. And the left desperately wants to do that. Faith, family, and the Constitution. They have to get rid of those three pillars of American values to get done what they really want to get done. I wish I could tell you that that's all the fraudulent, nasty stuff that was uncovered this week, but that wouldn't be true. It's a never-ending cascade of corruption, fraud, and gag me disrespect for the American people and the Constitution. This is a tidal wave of crapola. Without a doubt, Barry Obama and his crew are the most corrupt. And that's really saying something, because we've had some corrupt folks over the last 230 years. Are the most corrupt and pervasively corrupt crew to ever run the United States government, which they ran as their personal little fiefdom. The will of the people, the security of the people, and the stability of the Constitution and American values be damned. In fact, in some cases, like Barry's, he detested the last three matters. He detested you and me. He couldn't have cared less, folks. Hillary Clinton was cut of the same cloth. Now, what's really interesting is that Comey, who likes to send off these flamboyant tweets and pretend that he's like above the law and da-da-da-da-da. I mean, we know Comey has broken the law. A number of felonies. Black and white. There's no discussion. Comey admitted that he leaked confidential information, i.e. the so-called memos of his meetings with the President of the United States, to his buddy, the law professor at Columbia. I told you some about that last week and drew the lines for you, connected the dots. Because this is such an incestuous, smelly pool of swamp muck. It's almost unfathomable. But just this last week, although on one hand he says, you know, he didn't do anything wrong, and, you know, it's for the good of the country, and, you know, he sounds like Brennan. We're going to get to Brennan here in just a moment. We find out that Comey has hired that same professor as his lawyer. And now both the professor, who's in it up to his eyeballs, and Comey, who's underwater, but tries to tell everybody he's not, they're now both claiming attorney-client privilege. You can't make this up. I don't think that that's going to hold a lot of water, since obviously this guy was not Comey's attorney at the time the felony was committed, the confidential top secret information was transmitted and leaked to the press. Big no-no. Anyway, I just find it interesting to see the rats scurrying for cover. Now, Peter Strzok, I mean, you can't get lower on the totem pole in terms of ethics than he. And his babe, both of them married to other people, and his babe, Mrs. Page, at the FBI, who was the attorney, the personal attorney at the FBI, the staff attorney for Andy McCabe. Don't you just love the way all this wraps up? They're still at the FBI. They've been demoted. They've gone dark, other than as their texts to one another get uncovered and revealed. I mean, first you find out about the texts, then the FBI loses the texts, then in 48 hours, and says, gee, they can't be recovered. Then in 48 hours, the IG has all the texts again. Then Rosenstein, who is absolutely up to his eyeballs in this mess and really needs to go, be investigated, indicted, and prosecuted. Then Rosenstein and his merry bunch over there at DOJ, FBI, they stonewall getting information to Congress, who has the constitutional authority for oversight. And then when they get it over there, it's redacted. And then they lie about it, saying the redactions are just personal information between Strzok and Page. Congress finds out that the redactions are like key sentences that links all this directly to Obama and the White House. Beginning, by the way, in July and August of 2016, and thereafter, Obama's involvement, the spider at the center of the web, was spinning the web, up to and including Hillary's exoneration. Remember Comey's press conference, I think it was July 5th of 2016, and the commencement of the Trump investigation, which was like 3 days after she was exonerated, and the leaking of all that, which was done by Harry Reid. Because we have also found out here, this has actually come in bits and pieces, but all the pieces came together in the last week or two. Harry Reid, who lied about knowing anything about the dossier, got the dossier from John Brennan, Obama's hand-picked Muslim head of the CIA, who has also lied about knowing about the dossier, how it was funded, where he got it, whether he had it, blah, 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 under oath. We find out that Brennan brought it to Harry Reid. This is during the time periods that Strzok and Page, on the now unredacted and found, previously supposedly lost, text messages are texting back and forth saying the White House is running with the ball. Well, this week, we find out that Brennan, who's lied through his teeth through this whole thing, brought the dossier to Harry Reid, who lied through his teeth about the whole thing. Harry Reid wrote a letter to Comey saying that he wanted an investigation into Trump's Russian collusion. Now remember, Harry Reid wrote that letter in August. The FBI had already started this investigation going, and the White House was involved in July. Days after Hillary is let off the hook for her blatant and treasonous felonies. I mean, you just got to shake your head. It's just unbelievable. And I'm not done. You know those commercials you see on TV? $19.99, we're not done, you can get two. Well, I'm not done. Harry Reid sends a letter to Comey, and he also sends the letter to, or Comey leaks the letter to, the New York Times. And I believe it was August 30th that the Times runs with the story. Investigation into Trump collusion with Russia. This was a complete orchestrated conspiracy of treason. And it was conducted It was orchestrated. It was controlled. It was manipulated, not only by Loretta Lynch, Comey, McCabe, Baker, Strzecki, Bruce Orr at the Justice Department. Remember, he's the one whose wife worked for Fusion GPS, who drew the document, who hired Christopher Steele, a foreign agent, to put together the dossier paid for by Hillary, and basically written and or extracted from Russian plant information. So on August 30th, the New York Times runs with a story. And that's how the story got into the press, folks. And then thereafter, Comey lied about it, Clapper lied about it, Brennan lied about it, Sally Yates lied about it, the assistant attorney general, Loretta Lynch lied about it. Of course, she had already met with Bill Clinton, I believe, on July 2nd, was it? Yeah, I mean, it was three, four, 5 days before the unbelievable press conference by Comey, where he lays out all her crimes. I mean, a prosecutor in the first year of law school could have put her away, and then says she's off the hook because no reasonable, I think his exact words were, no reasonable prosecutor would take this case. Okay. All right. So that kind of ties all that stuff in for you. Now let me tell you a little bit about Mr. Brennan, who's squealing like a pig, like the pig he is, I might add, over there at CNN, who's made him the intelligence analyst contributor or whatever. I mean, they're made for each other, CNN and Brennan. And Brennan comes out with this unbelievable tweet about 2 weeks ago. I think I mentioned it to you. I think I even read it to you. But, you know, the venality, you know, the president is despicable. And he's, remember these words, and he's going to be relegated to the dustbin of history. Okay. Let me tell you some more about Mr. Brennan. In addition to his conversion to Islam in Riyadh in 2009, thereafter he was selected by Obama, it must have just been a coincidence, to be head of the CIA, with no intelligence background, I might add. Brennan, those words, the dustbin of history, come from a Russian, you can't, you know, it's unbelievable. The Russians, comes from a Russian revolutionary. His name is Leon Trotsky, you've probably heard the name. And he is the one who coined the phrase, the dustbin of history. Leon Trotsky also had the following words for his opponents, quote, "You are pitiful, isolated individuals. You are bankrupts. Your role is played out. Go to where you belong from now on, into the dustbin of history," unquote. Listen, it's no coincidence, folks, that John Brennan, who, hold on to your hats, remember, these are the people who are screaming about Russian collusion by Trump, who supported the Soviet-controlled American Communist Party. This is no kidding. He was a member of the American Communist Party that was funded and controlled by the Kremlin, by the Soviets, in the United States in the 1970s, and actually voted for that party, Communist Party, for its presidential candidate, Gus Hall. At the time, he confided to friends, by the way, that he thought this might hurt his chances to move up in the government. And later on, he would confide to people, as he was in selection for CIA director by Barry and crew, that it might hurt his chances to be head of the CIA. It didn't hurt his chances at all. Hell, it elevated him to the number one position, number one slot. He was the go-to guy, perfect for Barry's worldview and ideology. Oh, by the way, this was his tweet against Trump. This was last week, or the week before last, excuse me. It was right after McCabe's firing. When the full extent, this is to Trump, when the full extent of your venality, moral turpitude, and political corruption becomes known, you will take your rightful place as a disgraced demagogue in the dustbin of history. You may scapegoat Andy McCabe, but you will not destroy America. America will triumph over you. Unquote. Yes. In other words, this communist Islamist, head of the CIA, picked by Barry, lying through his teeth under oath to all sorts of people, who personally carried the dossier over to Harry Reid on a pre-contrived plan orchestrated by Obama, whereby Reid wrote a letter after the FBI had started the secretly started the investigation to cover the FBI's butt on the investigation, because now the leader of the Senate had written a letter saying you better investigate this, to be leaked to the New York Times to affect the election. Wow. Anyway, I think you get the message. So, in 2017, let me remind you that Mr. Brennan, I believe he swore an oath to the United States. Obviously, that doesn't mean much to him. It didn't mean much to any of them. He was calling for members of the executive branch, these are Trump's people, to defy Trump. They should, quote, refuse to carry out, unquote, his lawful directives if they don't agree with them. I want you to think about that for a moment. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And, oh my. And then Brennan was supported, I brought this to your attention, I believe show before last, by Samantha Power, who's an extreme alt-left babe, who's married to Cass Sunstein, an extreme left-wing guy, who was a regulatory czar for Obama, and who wrote a book talking about how progressives need to nudge their ideals forward until suddenly you're far enough entrenched. The poison pill is in the system of the enemy, and it can't be expelled. The Theory of Nudge by Cass Sunstein, the husband of Samantha Powers, Barack Obama's pick for United Nations ambassador, big fan of John Brennan and the deep state. And she said, after Brennan did that unbelievable tweet, and after Brennan said that people in the executive branch should disobey the orders of the commander-in-chief if they didn't agree with them, she tweeted out, "Not a good idea to piss off John Brennan," unquote. This is the same gal, by the way. And listen, this investigation is just starting. Who is responsible for 300 illegal unmaskings of people in the Trump circle who were illegally identified in illegally obtained transcripts through the illegally obtained FISA warrant that was signed off once by Comey, once by Rosenstein, once by Sally Yates, and once by some other dork who hopefully will hang also. And you think all this stuff just kind of came together and it was just a series of dominoes that by chance all kind of fell the way they did? You don't think there was a grand conspiracy here, folks? Yet another felony? Conspiracy to commit treason against the United States? Well, anyway. Now, Jeff Sessions. Oh, I'll stick with the... Yeah, you're right. You're right, Ms. Producer. I'll stick with Brennan here. And then I'll come back to Jeff Sessions. By the way, we found out this week that McCabe had ordered an investigation into Jeff Sessions for committing perjury, right? I mean, it wasn't bad enough that they got Sessions to stupidly recuse himself so that Rosenstein, who's in this up to his eyeballs, it just boggles your mind. The whole thing is so circular. It just boggles your mind. But they were also going to go after Sessions. At McCabe's order. McCabe, who was fired and is going to be prosecuted for lying on numerous occasions to the Inspector General, to the FBI, to Congress, you name it, was going to investigate Jeff Sessions for perjury. Okay, love it, love it. You know, they have sadly underestimated Donald Trump and the American people. And they really underestimated the tenacity of Goodlatte and Nunes in Congress and Grassley and Graham over in Senate. Now, this kind of brings us to Jeff Sessions. So we learned this week that Sessions has appointed a former, as best I can tell, a former prosecutor, senior level, former DOJ prosecutor, out in Utah, a guy by the name of Huber. I don't know anything about him. And apparently Huber has been working on this stuff for some time. And Sessions has kept it under wraps, which is kind of interesting. And apparently the IG, Horowitz, has made criminal referrals. And apparently, and I don't think anybody else is reporting this, there is a grand jury impaneled right now and hearing evidence. Let me tell you where that comes from. So, there was last week, this is a Fox News journalist. His name is Chad Pergram. And he sent out a tweet. Justice Department inadvertently confirms the grand jury's existence. Documents subpoenaed by Robert Goodlatte on behalf of the House Judiciary Committee required review by the Justice Department before being turned over. Let me explain this to you, because I think there's more going on. I think there's more going on here than we've been led to believe. And I think Jeff Sessions, I hope, I'm not sure whether I think it or I hope it, but I think Jeff Sessions has been doing an awful lot behind the scenes, and I think he may be as appalled, I hope, as we all are at this rampant lawlessness, this anti-constitutional rampage conducted, orchestrated, controlled, manipulated, and probably devised by the spider at the center of the web, Barry Baby. So the Justice Department has the job of reviewing subpoenas to look for any documents that could conflict with any ongoing grand jury investigation, information, evidence, you name it. And the official quote by the DOJ was, quote, "We are individually reviewing the remaining documents." This is the documents that are supposed to be going over to Congress, "to ensure that they do not include grand jury information, information about ongoing law enforcement actions involving American citizens, or privileged attorney-client communications." That, folks, means there was probably a brand new, likely, there's been a brand new grand jury impaneled somewhere, probably in Utah. Jeff Sessions picked Utah because it's far away from the swamp in Washington, D.C. Another kind of a clever deal. And a number of legal experts who have looked at this said, quote, "If he was talking about Mueller's grand jury, he would have said he was reviewing the documents to ensure no interference with a special counsel investigation, as has been said before." There's also a letter that surfaced last week from the attorney who's representing Andy McCabe. You know, GoFundMe, Andy, baby. Quote, "The investigation described in the Office of the Inspector General report was cleaved off from the larger investigation of which it was a part. Its completion expedited and the disciplinary process completed in a little over a week." Then, it appears that there is some witnesses in this new grand jury, which I believe has been impaneled, which all these clues point to, which Sessions' admission of the appointment of, you know, he doesn't want to call him a special counsel or special prosecutor, but Sessions has appointed an attorney with criminal prosecution authority to work with the IG. The attorney is not in the swamp, although he was an Obama appointee. He's way out there in Utah. I mean, there's just a lot of dots out there. We're going to have to see how it all falls out. But Sessions may be far more clever than anybody has given him credit for. And, you know, some of the ranting and raving by Trump and some of the pushback by Sessions, which is public, may have all been part of their game plan to throw the enemy off and to make sure that people didn't know what was happening until it was too late, so they couldn't get rid of evidence, concoct stories, collaborate with one another, etc. And a lot of us have wondered why Strzok and Page and Orr, even though demoted and in the dark now, are still at the FBI and the Justice Department getting salaries. Well, you know what? Here's my theory, folks. I think they're singing like little canaries to this new grand jury. You know, just like Mueller's investigation knocks off all the little guys and squeezes them to get information to go up the ladder to get the big guys, in Mueller's case, the prize being Trump, so too would a 30-year career prosecutor retired from the DOJ out in Utah do the same exact thing. Except his targets, my friends, his targets are Comey, McCabe, Yates, Straczynski, Baker, the former general counsel of the FBI, Lynch, Obama, Rice, Rhodes, Powers, and maybe some people we don't know about. So, I'm trying to temper reality with hope. I'm trying to blend the facts with what I really want to be happening. But I think the dots are beginning to give us a line of information here. All right, well, let me move over to another little topic here. I am going to predict right now, I've said this in the past, but when you look at the omnibus bill, which everybody's disgusted with, when you look at the failure of the Republicans to repeal Obamacare, when you look at the failure of the Democrats to be cohesive and the split in the Democratic Party, the few, should we say, left moderates, if there is such a thing, I mean, they're lefties, feuding with the alt-left of the party, and you see kind of the same thing going on in the Republican Party, the Trump populist, nationalist part of the party, definitely separated from and a large rift with the Rhino establishment part of the party, McConnell, McCain, Flake, Collins, you know, that whole Paul Ryan, that whole crew. I'm going to predict to you that within two election cycles, i.e. by 2024, we will have four significant, meaningful political parties in the United States, not two anymore. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the future. Because basically what a lot of people think right now is that really we just have one party up there. Yeah, we have the Freedom Caucus, which is kind of the conscience of Republican conservatism. And I'm sure on the left, they think the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders wing is the progressive wing of the party, and the rest of the folks are old fuddy-duddies. But I really think you're going to see that. Four parties by 2024. Yep. And I think you'll see a whole different way of governing, because there will have to be coalitions put together to get anything through Congress, kind of like you see in the parliaments of Israel and Britain, etc. It's going to be pretty interesting. We're in for a lot of interesting years, and let me tell you, we're in for a lot of interesting weeks. I mean, every week is like bombshell after shock after you shake your head in amazement and go, as scummy and as corrupt and as convoluted, interrelated, nepotistic you thought it was, it's worse. It's worse. Yes, it is. So, let me give you a little, let me interject just a little tidbit on economics, which I'm trying to cover, if you've noticed. If you go back to my show, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks ago now, just type in the search bar, canaries in the economic mine. I went over a bunch of things which are bubbling below the surface that nobody is talking about in this economy, so that you could start kind of doing what you need to do for you and your family. And then in the next show, I introduced several more canaries, and we've had some discussions over the last 3 or 4 weeks on the national debt and taxes and all sorts of things that all go into this big mix. Let me bring to your attention some information which just came out this week, unfortunately. The average credit card debt, first of all, credit card debt in the United States reached an all-time high collectively. Several trillion, I mean, the numbers doesn't really matter. It's trillions. In the last month. And according to CNBC, the average credit card debt has reached a record high of $6,375. That's 3% up from last year for the average household. The average household is estimated to owe approximately $17,000 in credit card debt. And the total amount of credit card debt in 2017, it's now more, was over $1 trillion. While economists and the mainstream media will say this is great because people are spending and the economy is rolling, folks, if any of you listening to me are in this position with this kind of credit card debt, paying interest rates of, you know, 18 to 28%, depending upon the card, in some cases a little bit less, some cases a little bit more, then you know that it's really not a good thing. Number one, it affects your credit utilization ratio, which is key to your credit report. I mean, in the best of all worlds, you would have no debt. You wouldn't need a credit report, and you'd have no credit because you can't have a credit report without debt. I mean, it's all kind of a big trap. But since most of you, most of us, do have a credit score, because just about all of us have some type of debt, the credit utilization ratio is essentially the amount of the debt you have to the amount of debt you could have if you fully drew out your cards. In other words, if you have a card with a $5,000 limit and you have $2,500 drawn on the card, you have a credit utilization rate of 50%. Anything over 30% on any card dings your credit, just so you know. And it dings it pretty, I mean, it's a major component of your credit report. The average family now is paying $1,300 a year. $1,300 a year. That's more than $100 a month. That's a lot of money in credit card interest over the course of every year. And there's two ways you can attack this. Because what you really want to do is you want to get rid of this credit card debt. I mean, this is, I hope, the highest interest rate debt you are carrying. 18-28% is pretty steep interest. And, of course, credit card companies love it. I mean, the more you spend, the more they rub their hands in profitable glee. So the first thing you can do is you can pay off your cards by interest rate. In other words, the cards with the highest interest rate are the ones that you pay off first. And obviously, the more interest you save as you pay the cards off, the more money you have to continue the payoff. So that's how it works. And that is called the avalanche method. So paying off the cards from top, your highest interest rate, to bottom, your lowest interest rate card, is the avalanche method. If you pay off your cards relative to their balances, forget the interest rate, and you pay off the card starting with the smallest card, the smallest balance you have. Let's say you have four cards. One has a balance of 400, one has a balance of 1,000, one has a balance of 2,000, one has a balance of 3,000, just for example's sake. If you start by paying off the $400 card first and then the $1,000 card, etc., that is called the snowball method. But may I suggest, and once again, I'm not a financial consultant, I am not giving you advice, but I will tell you that if it were me, I'd throw every dime that you can throw at paying off your credit cards, getting those balances to zero, and saving yourself a whole bunch of money, a whole bunch of credit problems, and a whole bunch of interest. We are now close to our two-hour limit. And once again, I have not covered all the stuff I want to cover, which is very annoying. Very annoying. So I think what I'm going to do, because I don't want to do it piecemeal, and there's more and more information coming out on these tech companies and the laws they have broken, how they really view you. I want you to understand this. These tech companies, whether it's Google or Facebook or whoever, they view you as a product, not as a human being. They are stealing all your information without your knowledge, which everybody's in an uproar over, for a reason, maybe several reasons. We find out just yesterday that Facebook illegally, you remember everybody jumping up and down about this outfit out of Britain that, you know, actually had people take surveys and stuff through Facebook and got the information on 50 million people and helped Trump in his presidential campaign. And everybody was just outraged. Well, guess what came out yesterday, just a few days later? Facebook gave all that type of information for free to Barack Obama's campaign in 2012 because, and I quote the FB executive officer who said this, "We like you. We agree with you." So everybody's up in arms over this one outfit helping Trump, paying for the deal, and actually, whether people knew it or not, they had agreed to give over the information. But on the other hand, Facebook illegally, it's an illegal campaign contribution, amongst other things, illegally took all your information and gave it to Barry's campaign in 2012 because that was their political leaning. Do you begin to see how dangerous these companies are? I mean, they are dangerous, dangerous, dangerous. And Facebook, in addition, it's now come out through one of the original people who was a consultant to the founders of Facebook, that Facebook and all the rest of them, the FANGs, as they're called, view you as a product. The reason they rip this information off you is, number one, so they can bolster their political beliefs by allowing folks, at least that they know about, they didn't know about Cambridge, the outfit that was working for Trump. But the other reason is they sell your information, folks. They sell your information to advertisers. That's how they sell their advertising. That's why things that you seem to like, I mean, you almost kind of think about something, and suddenly it pops up on your screen. You're a product. You are to the tech companies a product, and you are to the alt-left, which includes the tech companies, a deplorable. Used and abused on every level. It's a good thing you're good, strong Americans, and you don't whine about it like Hillary. So there's a lot to go into here, and Microsoft just came out with, just as a prelude to next week, which, once again, there'll be a lot more information because things are unraveling quickly for these FANG companies now, particularly Facebook. and Google. But Microsoft just came out with a whole set of rules where they can go in and look at your content anytime they want, where they can strip you of content that they don't like. I mean, this is totalitarian. Particularly when you remember, and I talked about it last week, what the mayor of London said about the internet, how it needs to be controlled, and what Barry said in his two speeches to sports people that were supposed to be secret about how we have to make sure the internet only gets out the right information. Yeah, the right information. It should be the left information. So instead, I'm going to wind up the show with talking about the Second Amendment, which is in duress, folks. Don't underestimate the fact that the left smells blood, and they're going to try and do everything they can. And just in the last week, with former Supreme Court Justice Stevens and a host of other lefties, they have always denied wanting to take your guns because they knew it wouldn't get them anywhere. But as with everything else in the era of Trump, they're now out of the closet. They do want to take your guns, and they want to repeal the Second Amendment, and they want to make sure you never have the chance to own guns or get guns again. They don't want you to have ammo either. Debbie Wasserman Schultz introduced a bill this past week in Congress so that you'd have to go through a background check to buy ammo. And, of course, last week, and if you didn't listen to last week's show, you should. Last week I talked to you about a bunch of companies that are infiltrated by, controlled by, or scared of the alt-left who are putting their finger on the scale of the Second Amendment, or should I say against the scale of the Second Amendment, like Citicorp. Yeah, one of the 19 big banks that you shouldn't be dealing with to begin with. That's owned 36% by the government. Sure, terrific. Love it. And then we have David Hogue and other spokespeople like him. Right? Look, let me put this in context for you. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution, freedom of speech, number one, the right to keep and bear arms, number two, religious freedom, number four, all the way down the line. They're called the Bill of Rights, not the Bill of Privileges, not the Bill of Government Goodies, but the Bill of Rights. Inalienable rights given to you by your creator. And they are enumerated in the Constitution, ironically, just as Barack Obama said in 1991. They are a covenant of negative rights. In other words, to the government, they are rights that the government cannot interfere with. They are negative rights to the government. The left wants to reverse that, folks. If you think gun control is about safety, you're crazy. Gun control is about control. That's what it's about. And I will remind you, and I will underline this, italicize it, capitalize it, and put it in bold, that without the Second Amendment, the other 9 amendments, 1 and then 3 through 10, cannot be safeguarded, cannot be protected, and cannot be defended. That, folks, is why we see the assault on the Second Amendment. And as part of the assault on the Second Amendment, there is the assault on the First Amendment. Because once again, if you control information, including information about guns and the Second Amendment, you can control perceptions, which controls actions. And the left is great at this stuff. And Twitter and Facebook and Google and Microsoft are all in the fray, controlling what people see about guns, the Second Amendment, you name it. This is all one big plan by the left. And if you don't think they're capable of this kind of concerted effort, all you have to do is remember 20 minutes ago when I was talking about this conspiracy which they hatched and almost got away with concerning Hillary Clinton and Trump. They are perfectly capable of, they delight in, and they're really good at putting that together complex, conspiratorial, and in my mind, treasonous plans to deprive you of rights and to bolster their control. So David Hogue, he's that 17-year-old, good speaker from Parkview, the son of, you know, alt-left parents, one of whom happens to be an FBI agent. Isn't that amazing? Huh. Amazing. Must be a coincidence. Oh, my producer says to say more about Microsoft. No, I'm going to save that for next show. We're gonna one of these days I'm going to get to really going into this incredibly scary tech company thing and why they need to be broken up using antitrust laws. But the left, folks, they are altering the minds and indoctrinating the kids. You know that walkout day that they had? Do you know that there were kids in kindergarten and third grade that were forced to go out and participate? I mean, these kids don't know what's going on. As one example, there was a school in Connecticut, in New London, that the kindergartners were forced by the teachers to go out and to try and mask it, because it was during the 17-minute walkout around the nation, and to try and mask it, the teacher, instead of having them shout, you know, get rid of guns or whatever, had them shout, "We love school, we love school." Well, you know, if they love school so much, how come they weren't in school? Five-year-olds, folks. These are five-year-olds. The name of the school, by the way, is Harbor Elementary School, New London, Connecticut. And the official word of the school was that the walkout, including these five-year-old kids, was about school safety, student safety, etc. It was, I'm quoting one of the teachers now. It was discussed, it was a safety march, and we took them out and they chanted, "We love school," and "Honk your horn." And we told them that the 17 angels are above in heaven, and they're watching down, and they're proud, unquote. Wow. Okay. And then, of course, we have David Hogue. You know, it's really interesting. If you look at, on Twitter, thank God for Twitter, 10:37 a.m., what is the date? Anyway, go to Valerie Jarrett's Twitter account. That's at Valerie Jarrett, V-A-L-E-R-I-E, J-A-R-R-E-T-T. Yes, the same Valerie Jarrett that was the handler and puppeteer of Barack Obama, the same Valerie Jarrett born in Tehran, Iran, the same Valerie Jarrett who was the driving force behind the Iran deal and them getting $150 billion and not having to give up their nuclear technology or their missiles. If you go to that and you go through her account, you will see a picture of Valerie Jarrett standing next to David Hogue. Huh. Imagine that. I thought these kids were all self-starters. I thought it was grassroots. I thought it was simply a welling up by the children. Right. There's another thing I'd like you to do. By the way, Hogue, who has 600,000 Twitter followers, right? Unbelievable. Hogue, Laura Ingraham got on his butt. And Hogue has now been having his Twitter followers pummel the companies that advertise with Ingraham. I mean, they've tried this with Hannity. They've tried it with Levin. They successfully tried it because George Soros was behind it with Glenn Beck when he was on Fox. I mean, this is the left trying to control speech, folks, for all the reasons we've discussed. And they've actually gotten four advertisers to drop her show, including Progressive Insurance, a pet food company, Snish to Delish, something like that. And the bottom line is that I'm going to get you a list of those companies, and we can boycott them right back. By the way, Dick's Sporting Goods. Remember the sporting goods store that was kowtowed that revealed their progressive colors? Field & Stream and Dick's Sporting Goods. They're owned by Dick's. They are like on the financial ropes just in 2 months. Their business and traffic is way down. Good. I'll never walk into a Dick's again. And although it's a great store, I'll never walk into a Field & Stream again. Ever. I don't care what they do. They could recant tomorrow, and I won't go in there. I mean, we need to, there's somewhere between 60 and 80 million of us. And you know, when 60 or 80 million wallets don't get opened, that has an effect. Way more than 600,000 Twitter users of David Hoge, I might add. One of the things I'd like you to look at for on David Hoge, oh, by the way, the kid is so nasty. And I don't know if you've heard some of the things he said. I mean, he is eloquent, but he is really nasty. And I want you to look at the pictures of him. You Google him up. There's a bunch of pictures. I haven't found one picture where he's smiling. He is one angry dude. And you know what? I think he was an angry dude long before the Parkland shooting. I think that's just who he is. And he's a dangerous angry dude. And he's not a children. A 17-year-old boy is a young man in my book. A child is somebody, you know, like 14, 12, 13, 14, younger, 15 on the cusp, 16, young man, 17, definitely a young man. Particularly if you're putting yourself out in the spotlight. And he, kind of like Barry Obama, you know, Barry would put himself out there and then cloak himself in being black. So if you didn't like his policy, then you were racist. David Hoge puts himself out there and cloaks himself as one of the children. So if you don't like what he's saying, you know, you're being nasty to the children. Same deal. The alt-left is the alt-left. They do what they do. Unfortunately, they do it well. Anyway, take a look at his pictures, and tell me what you see. Because it's almost scary, actually. It's almost scary what you see in those eyes. All right, David Hoge, by the way, just to give you an idea of how alt-left and nasty he is. The current advertiser of Ingram's that they're trying to pressure is Arby's, and when Arby's wouldn't cave, Hoge blasted out the names, the addresses, the emails, and the phone numbers of Arby's executives. Okay? I think that says a lot. Not to mention it puts the families of those executives, including their children, in danger. But that is the left, folks. Deny everything, admit nothing, divert. And they are rife with both untruth and hypocrisy. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll be back at you next week with, I'm quite sure, another mountain of information you're not going to hear anywhere else. And I hope, with more news on what's unfolding now with this potential new grand jury out in Utah. And I hope with enough time to finally do the segment I want to do on this scary, 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 must be stopped rampage over your rights, your privacy, and your information, and the First Amendment by the fangs, the big techs. Have a great week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.